So I first just want to start by saying that I come to this work really because I care deeply about military families and feel strongly about the injustice that they endure. And this is actually a follow-up study to my thesis work that I conducted at the University of Washington at the School of Public Health. And we did that work on similar parental deployment and looked at adolescent well-being outcomes. Okay, I have no financial disclosures. So I just wanted to start by showing this photograph, which just to me captures the different ways that everyone responds to war, including soldiers. So you see some soldiers here who are emotional, some who are hugging, supporting each other, and other people who look stoic. I think some people even look disengaged from what's happening. And I think we've heard much of this background today, but just that there have been 2 million U.S. troops deployed to both Iraq and Afghanistan, and there really have been an unprecedented number of psychiatric casualties that I think the research is just now starting to really sort of appreciate and understand the depth and the, I think, breadth of the problem. And also, I think my hypothesis in looking at this is that because of, I think, some of the mental health issues, these invisible wounds of war that the Rand Corporation looked at, so PTSD, traumatic brain injury, that these really put military families at an incredible risk compared to their civilian families. So we see increasing suicide rates, lots of anger and hostility related to PTSD, substance use concerns that we've heard today, and then also employment concerns. And then also just that I think there isn't a lot of research on military families at all from previous wars, and I think even if there was, these wars are really different, and there's going to be more information on that to come, but that there are a higher proportion of our armed forces that are being deployed. Deployments are much longer now. Redeployment to combat is common, and the breaks in between tours are also infrequent. This no front line, I think, is also unique to Iraq and Afghanistan, and also more troops are surviving, which is a wonderful thing because of medical intervention that's on, you know, out on the field. But also, I think, as troops come home, presents new challenges as well. So what do we know about parents in the military? Almost 2 million children had a parent in the military since the beginning of these wars. Over 40% of service members have children, and single parents do represent a significant 5% for active duty and almost 9% for selected reserve. And I think it's really important to say that I absolutely believe and know it's true, and it's also evident in the literature, that military families are resilient and they're adaptable and they cope with incredible stressors and usually do really well. So some of the things I'm going to share with you today I think are certainly hard and impressive, but I think given the realities that they face, are remarkable that it's not worse. They're exposed to unique stressors, this adjustment to changing roles. So they talk about this deployment cycle. So the gear up to be deployed, then the deployment, and then reintegration. Which actually this reintegration, this expectation of this sort of celebration that the soldier's home, that things are going to be great now, and then sort of the reality of this experience that's in on the family, and so sort of the expectation of how wonderful it was supposed to be is faced with this reality, that I think that incongruence is also very challenging for families. There are higher risks of drug and alcohol use in children who have deployed parents. Boys are more likely to report quality of life with a deployed parent. That's from some work that we did previously. There's definitely more academic problems with kids who have deployed parents, and also lots of anxieties and fears. I will do better and hit the right button, hopefully, from now on. So the purpose of our study was to examine the association of parental military service, and then we looked at school-based weapon carrying, school-based physical violence, and gang membership. And it was a population-based sample, which is sort of unique in this work, in that a lot of, I think, almost exclusively all that we know about military adolescents comes from samples of just looking at military adolescents, and we were able to look at, while we have our limitations, which I'll talk about, we were really able to compare our findings with civilian families, which was great. So this is, we use data from the Washington State Healthy Youth Survey. It comes, they do it every couple of years. They've done it for over 10 years. It was almost equal distribution of boys and girls. And then we had more 8th graders than 10th and 12th graders. In the end, we ended up combining 10th and 12th graders. So our data is on 8th graders and then 10th and 12th graders. And this is just some basic sort of demographic information about our sample. Deployed is on top, military and civilian. So the question on the survey, what we were able to say, has your parent been deployed to a combat zone in the last 6 years? If this, you know, the student self-reported yes, then they were deployed. There was a question that you could say no, but your parent was in the military, or my parent is not in the military. So we were able to have civilian, military, and deployed. Deployed is in the kind of pinky red color on top. So this, the first is maternal education, less than 12 years. And the scale is 0 to 40, just so that's clear. And then poor academic achievement or student self-reporting, C's, D's, getting mainly C's, D's, and F's. Drug use was over the last 30 days, self-report of marijuana use or other drug use, not alcohol. And then binge drinking, which was having more than four or five drinks in a row in a 2-week period, like in one setting. And then this, we added these variables with video game playing and TV watching because of some of the associations with more violent behavior. The question is more than 4 hours in one day was our question. So kids who self-reported video game playing or TV watching for 4 hours or more in one day were a yes in this category, and everything else was a reference. So again, deployed on top, military is the blue, and civilian children are in the gold. So this is unadjusted outcomes. These are just prevalence of our different outcomes. So weapon carrying, and there's like a dose response. So the first column is weapon carrying. So about 5% of civilian kids report carrying a weapon to school. And then it's about 8% of military kids, and then about 12% of deployed kids. And it's like that for each of the outcomes, which is fairly surprising. I mean, that's it. And then these are our results. So in the first column, weapon carrying, these are among 8th grade girls with a deployed parent were a little more than twice as likely compared to their civilian peers to bring a weapon to school. And then interestingly, nothing was significant for deployed parents with a gang membership, but it was, we had almost twice as likely for military kids. We controlled for race, ethnicity, grade, and maternal education. In our previous study, we controlled for academic achievement, binge drinking, and drug use, and got some feedback that they were actually mediating the outcome. And so we did it both, but the data that I'm presenting today is just controlling for race, ethnicity, grade, and maternal education. We had effect modification by gender and grade, which is why it's stratified. And this is with 8th grade boys. 8th grade boys, the deployed parent, were almost twice as likely report physical fighting at school, and also twice as likely to report gang membership. And then in 10th and 12th grade girls, all of our results were significant I think one of the more intriguing findings is the gang membership, that girls are almost 3 times as likely to report being a member of a gang than their civilian peers. And then 2.5 times as likely to report physical fighting in the last 30 days at school, and bringing a weapon to school in the last year, almost twice as likely to, again, compared to their civilian peers. And 8th grade boys, we had very similar findings, which is very interesting. I've had an opportunity to actually talk with other researchers here about why sort of the expectation that boys would be more violent or be more sort of externally expressing their sort of upset feelings about their parents' deployment than girls. But what, we have actually very similar findings with actually girls being more likely to report being a member of a gang. So again, weapon carrying at school, boys with a deployed parent were almost 3 times as likely than their civilian peers, 2.5 times as likely for physical fighting, and gang membership was about twice as likely. So our conclusions are just that boys and girls with a deployed parent, particularly older adolescents, are at increased risk for carrying weapons and physical fighting at school, and also being a member of a gang. And our limitations, which, you know, to be clear, that the data is all self-reported, and I don't think we have any reason to think civilian kids would be reporting differently than military kids or kids with a deployed parent, but it's definitely self-reported. It's cross-sectional data. And also, I often get, you know, asked questions about, so do you know what service, you know, if they were in the Army, if they were in the Marine Corps, were they in the reserves? And we just didn't have that level of detail from the data that we had access to. We don't know anything about which parent was deployed. We don't know anything about what happened to that parent as well. So is the parent coming back injured? Is the parent involved in care? Is the parent, you know, re-enlisting? We just don't have access to that information. So I definitely think we need more innovative and targeted interventions. I think we've heard from other sort of presenters today that there isn't a lot of research, and we really need to better understand what's going on, I think, for military families, and especially compared to their civilian peers. So there is definitely growing interest and research in sort of looking at adolescents among military adolescents, but we don't have a way at all to sort of capture what's happening in other states. As far as we know, Washington State is the only state that even asked questions about sort of with a large sample of sort of who's in the military and who's not. There's no comprehensive system nationally that looks at military families or any other state. And also just, I think, enhancement of school community and military-based resources. I actually think there are a lot of resources out there. They're just not very connected, and I think they're difficult to navigate. And when you're overwhelmed and having a hard time, I think it's complicated to figure out who you need to call for sort of rent support, and who you call when your kid's misbehaving, and who you call to help clean your house because you're overwhelmed. I think all those things exist, but I think they're not connected for people. So I just wanted to thank my co-investigators. Janice and Todd were actually my thesis committee, and now they're not really my peers, but they're they're my colleagues. Mona Johnson, who's an incredible resource, she directs the School Behavioral Health Program at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, just outside of Tacoma in Washington State, and then also the Healthy Youth Survey people at Department of Health at Washington State. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.